Chof Nissen, Dalet de Chalamoid, 24th of April, Rabbi Yossi Cohen, Pesach and Tisha B'Av.
First of all, Ashkoyach to the Torah Way for giving me the opportunity to try and use my time properly. Avni Nezer, in two places, Avni Nezer writes that Chodesh Nissan is such an incredible time as far as what a person can achieve. He writes that, I don't leave my house the entire Chodesh Nissan. And in two places he writes that an hour in Chodesh Nissan, k'yoy mechoshev. 1 hour in Chodesh Nissan, what a person can achieve in that 1 hour is tantamount to what a person can achieve the rest of the year in an entire day. And as I say, it's definitely this kind of incredible organization like the Torah Way, which gives us the opportunity to try and use our time properly, especially in a time, the Reishis Hashanah in a way, it's the beginning of the year. Chodesh Zelachem Reish Chadoshim, and as we'll see, what's happening in these days is something which has ripple effects for the rest of the year, and the value of time is something which is very much emphasized by this organization. It's actually interesting that Rishonim bring down, Rabbeinu Ephraim brings this down, Al HaTorah. He says that all the time spans that we're familiar with, the general time spans that we're used to talking about, the 60 seconds in a minute, the 60 minutes in an hour, the 6 working days of the week, the 24 hours in a day, 365 days a year, 4 seasons, all these different time spans that we're familiar with, each and every one of them, by no coincidence, corresponds to a different chelik of Torah. It's no coincidence there are 60 seconds in a minute and 60 minutes in an hour, and there are 60 mesechas in Shas. That's why once upon a time people used to be referred to as a Gaon, for that reason. That's, they used to be Gaon as Gematria 60, they had mastered all 60 mesechas in Shas. So the 60 seconds and 60 minutes corresponds to the 60 mesechas in Shas to remind us of what a person should occupy their time with. 24 hours in a day corresponds to 24 Choftal at Sifrei Tanakh. It's the 6 working days of the week is connected to Shisha Sidri Mishnah. All this is brought down in the Rishonim. The 365 days a year, or 365 mitzvahs loisah, say the 4 seasons connected to Arba Chelkei Shulchan Aruch. Each and every time span that we're familiar with, again, by no coincidence, corresponds to a different chelik of Torah Shebiksav, Torah Shebal Peh, to remind ourselves what we should do and how we should occupy our time. In fact, the Megala Mukis in one place, the Megala Mukis brings down that when David HaMelech talks about his lifespan, Yemeshin Eisenu Behem Shivim Shana, Allah Zoy Chazayin to be a lot longer than that. But the time span that David talks about and the amount that David lived, 70 years, says the Megala Mukis, even that time is, if you make a calculation of how much 70 years is in hours, take 70 times 24 times 365, you'll see that what will come out on your calculator is exactly Tariyag 1,000 hours with a couple of hundred more, but the figure that comes out is Tariyag 1,000, 613,000. The tremendous value of time is, in a way, we get the encouragement from all the various time spans that we're familiar with. Those different time spans remind us of how we should try and occupy our time. So as we said, the Skulas Hazman of Yetzias Mitzrayim, everything we do is Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim, and we constantly try and refer back to these events and what happens here, always to remind ourselves and to draw whatever we can from those events. The famous Ramban, which tells us in Parshas Bo, why there are no names for the days of the week and why there are no names for the months of the year. So Ramban there writes, there's no names in the Torah for the days of the week, it's all numbers, Yom Rishon, Yom Sheni, Yom Shlishi, etc. To remind us of Zocher Esir Mashabbos Lekatsho, a person should always remind themselves of Shabbos. If you use names, so that's got no connection at all to Shabbos. If you say Hayom Yom Rishon, Shabbos, you've just performed the mitzvah deraisa of Zocher Esir Mashabbos Lekatsho. Ramban says the same thing, that there's no names in the Torah for the months of the year. Also, it's all numbers, Chodesh HaRishon, Chodesh HaSheni, Chodesh HaShishi, that way always to remind us of Yetzias Mitzrayim, to Mekayim, the mitzvah deraisa of Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. He then discusses why later in history that changed. But we see that Yetzias Mitzrayim is something which is always connected to us. The ripple effects are always there, and we draw lessons from it, La'olam Voed. Maybe it's the way we went down to Tegolos, the famous Masilis Hashorim, how he talks about the Avodas Perech. That's the way the Yetzhara traps a person, and the way Pari trapped us, and the way a person's time can be so quickly stolen from them, in a way that you don't have any time to think about what you want to do with life. It's something which is constantly in every area and every way relevant to us. the Amshanova Rebbe Zecher Tzadik Livracha, he once pointed out, unfortunately he only left us stranded in the middle of this idea, so homework will be to finish it. But the Amshanova Rebbe once pointed out, he combined two different things that are brought down in Chazal. One is that V'nogoy V'rofoy, we find that whenever Mitzrayim was struck, it was a refuah and a yeshua and a salvation for Klal Yisro. And the other thing combined to that is that there's a Medrash which says that there's a month in between each and every one of the Makas. Between Dam, between Tzfardeh, between each one there was a month. So we started making a calculation that, according to this, if every single striking against the Egyptians was a yeshua for us, so it comes out as follows. The last Makkah was Makkah's Bechiris, which was, according to the Cheshvan, on Tesvav Nisan. So they were struck, all the Bechirim were struck and killed, and for us, Kadashli Kol Bechir, V'nogah V'rofay, they were struck, they were killed, and we had the Refuah and the Yeshua. According to the calculation, there's a month in between each and every one of them. It comes out that a month beforehand was Makkah's Cheshach. Makkah's Cheshach is, according to that Cheshvan, Tesvav Nisan was Makkah's Bechiris, so Tesvav Adar is Makkah's Choshech. So for them it was Makkah's Choshech, and for us Tesvav Adar became Layhudim Hoysa Oyer of Simcha. So you see the ripple effects of that Makkah had effects for us in Purim. According to that calculation, it comes out that a month beforehand was Makkah's Arbe, which lands on Tesvav Shvat, Tu Bishvat. Tu Bishvat is a time where our trees begin to blossom, and as we know, Makkah's Arbe destroyed their trees. So every single month, unfortunately, this is where he ended. Although may I just point out that, interesting, according to this calculation, it comes out that Tesvav Tishrei is Makkah's Orev, Tesvav Tishrei is Sukkot, and Orev, as we know, are the wild animals that cause destruction amongst the Mitzrayim, and the Tesvav Tishrei is Anani HaKavod, Sukkot, which protect us from the wild animals. I'll leave it to the Shalom Bayis experts to explain why Tzfardea corresponds to Tu Bishvat, Tu Ba'av, which is the time of Shidduchim, etc. Perhaps you should jump into the fire for your spouse, whatever the conclusions are, but it's an interesting thing that he started slowly but surely working it out. So again, the ripple effects of Yetzias Mitzrayim are always there, and throughout history we've felt them in different places and different times. Even the culmination, the climax, the end of Yetzias Mitzrayim, how everything eventually worked out, something which throughout Golus Klal Yisrael has drawn from. One of the famous questions that many Mefarshim ask is that Leil HaSeder, which is all about Seder, and everything that we do has a Seder, the most important thing we do in Seder, Leil HaSeder, is Shaloi Kaseder. Chayev Odom, anyone who doesn't say these words, Lo Yotze Yedei Chalosei, Pesach Matzo Morach. Pesach, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu Pasach Al Bati Yisrael. Matzah, because there wasn't enough time for the dough to rise. And Morah, because of Vayimoras Chayehim. Many Mefarshim ask the obvious question that the Seder is not the right Seder. In chronological order, Morah happened before Matzah and before Pesach. The Seder should really be, I would have thought, Pesach, Matzah, or should I say Morah, Pesach, and Matzah. And here again, this is something which throughout Golos Klal Yisrael has drawn inspiration and drawn chizuk from this concept, that the Baal HaGadah, whoever it was, and some say it was even Eliyahu HaNavi, whoever the Baal HaGadah was, is not here teaching us the chronological order of events. He's not telling us how things happened. Obviously, Morah was first. But what he's telling us here is that we have to realize, retroactively, we can appreciate the Morah of Mitzrayim as part of the Gula as well. Kolzman, the person's experiencing the suffering, and there's no way they can fully appreciate that the suffering is actually part of the Gula. The actual suffering, the Kur HaBarzel, the whole cleansing, the whole purification process is actually part of the Gula itself. It was only when we were standing at the end of the stage, we were already holding the matzah, we were already out of Mitzrayim, that retroactively we looked back and realized that Morah was a cleansing process, a purification process, and it was actually something which prepared Klal Yisrael for the eventual Geula, and that's what they realized at the end. So I just wanted to speak about one particular issue here, one particular point of Yetzias Mitzrayim that perhaps is relevant to our Golus as well, and we can perhaps help ourselves in our situation to end this Golus as well. Yetzias Mitzrayim is the phrase which is always used, and the Sforim being down that strictly speaking, it should be Yitziyot Mimitzrayim, not Yitzias Mitzrayim. Yitzias Mitzrayim implies that Mitzrayim went out. But Svarim bring down that there was a certain amount of Mitzrayim in every single person. And that Mitzrayim within us needed to be removed for us to be able to eventually have that Geula. And in every one of our Golias, there's always sometimes a certain amount of that Golas within us, which we need to try and analyze how we can get rid of it to eventually be able to leave. The question which is asked by a number of Mepharshim, so the Kushas Levi brings this down, and others bring this question down. Why did Klal Yisrael actually leave after 400? They were supposed to be there for 400 years, and after 210 years, they managed to be taken out of that Golus. The Kushas Levi there brings about the concept of the talks about the fact that the Ovis already knew about it beforehand, and the tsar that they had in their machshava was mitzaref to the physical bondage and suffering that the children went through, and that suffering managed to bring us out early. That's how he brings an answer to this question. But I saw in the Ostrovtzer Rebbe, he asked this question, and he writes there that the gezeira of 400 years was something which was officially supposed to be there for Klal Yisrael to suffer a certain amount of time. But the gezeira was only that each person should suffer. But that I should suffer for you, and that you should suffer for me, that was not originally part of the gezeira. Klal Yisrael, by suffering and feeling the pain of one another, through doing that, increased their own personal pain and suffering, and as a result of that, managed to minimize the amount of time they were supposed to be in Golus. That's what he brings down there. And just a remez to that, interestingly enough, the Ben Ish Chaim one place brings down that Miriam, as we know Chazal say, was called Miriam al Shem Hamor. Her parents were from Shevet Levi. Her parents were not really in the Shibbutz. Shevet Levi was capable of walking around in Mitzrayim quite freely. But her parents felt that if Klal Yisrael are suffering, we have to do something about it as well. And they put themselves in a situation of suffering and misery by, like Moshe Rabbeinu himself, he himself, Nasan Eino Velibo Elios Meitzar Aleim. They called their daughter Miriam al Shem Hamora that Klal Yisrael were going through, even though they themselves were not. So the Ben Ish Chai brings down that Miriam, her tremendous sensitivity, which displayed itself by the fact that she stood by her brother, everyone else had given up basically, and she, Vatisatza Bachoise Mirochet, she stood by her brother who was being slowly but surely sent down the river. It looked as if all hope was lost, and she was most nefesh for that brother. She took care of him, she nurtured him afterwards, she made sure that he was taken care of by Bisya Baspare. And that tremendous sensitivity that she displayed 80 years before he eventually became the savior that took us out of Mitzrayim, that sensitivity which was injected into her by the fact that her parents showed so much sensitivity by calling her Miriam when everyone else was suffering and they weren't, that is what saved the day. And he points out that the name Miriam, the first and the last letters are Mem. So Mem plus Mem, Mem is 40 plus another 40 is 80. So this incredible person who showed so much sensitivity and took so much care of her brother, she was the one who later, 80 years later, was the one who, the middle letters, Resh and Yud, was the one who could witness and bring an end to the 210 years of Golus, and in a way it seems minimize it from being 400 years from the fact that she showed so much sensitivity. And it seems that, again, being the prototype to all Golias, Mitzrayim and the way we managed to shorten the amount of time we were Mitzrayim is something which, according to what the Ostrovtzer Rebbe says, and it's wanted to say, by feeling the tsar of somebody else, by getting involved in the tsar of somebody else, can actually minimize the fixed time that we're supposed to be in Golus. Daf Yomi just recently learned a Gemara in Menachos Daf Lamed Zayin, where the Gemara there talks about the sugya of Tefillin, and the Gemara there discusses a shocking situation of a person who is born with two heads. Perhaps it's what we call Siamese twins today. And the Gemara there discusses a number of different questions about someone who's born with two heads. If a person's born with two heads, on which head do they have to put tefillin? On one head, on both heads? If one head, which head? The Gemara discusses if a person's born with two heads, how much they have to give for pidyon haben? Is it considered one? Is it considered two? Different shailas the Gemara there brings down. And on the side there, the Shittim Kubetzes brings a medrash that happened in the days of Shlomo HaMelech. A person with two heads came to Shlomo HaMelech And it seems that this person, or shall I say, these people's father, these two people, he was claiming these two people, as we'll see, he claimed, or they claimed, that their father had died, and it seems he left a small fortune, and this person with two heads came to Shlomo HaMelech to ask him how much he's entitled to from the Yerusha. He said to him, our father has just died, and I, being two people, because I've got two heads, I'm entitled to a double Yerusha. And it seems that the siblings didn't seem to think so. They seemed to think that this is one person, not two people. And they left it to Shlomo HaMelech to decide, am I one or are we two? And the wisest of all men then decided to test it. And he said, okay, let's check out. So the Medrash brings down. And he took a bucket, and he placed the bucket over one of the heads. And then he took hot water and poured it on the other head. So obviously the one which had the bucket over it couldn't see what was going on. And then hot water was placed on the second head, and both heads simultaneously screamed together. So Shlomo picked up the bucket over his head, and I'm sorry, my friend, but you're only one, you're not two. If you didn't see what was going on, and you're both screaming, then it seems intrinsically, in essence, you're really only one. This is what the Medrash, on the side of the Shidduch Kubetzes, brings that Medrash. I saw, in the name of a pre-World War II Maggid, he wants to take a very important lesson from this particular Medrash. He says that Shlomo Nahir defines that this person was in essence one. So he wants to say the following very important lesson. He says that Klal Yisrael also has many different heads. There are those that have a shtreimel on their heads. There are those that have a spodek on their heads. There are those that have a black hat on their heads. There are those that have a grey hat on their head. There are those that have a straw hat on their head. There are those that wear turbans on their head. There are those that wear no hats, no yarmulkes. And wherever you want, you've got the full spectrum of head coverings or no head coverings. What is going to be the litmus test that Klal Yisrael in essence has won? The litmus test is going to be when boiling hot water, or Rahman al-Islam missiles, or whatever it might be, lands on one of the heads, any one of those heads, what does the rest of Klal Yisrael do? Do we just turn the other way and say, Shalom alei nafshi ki b'shiris libi eilech, here Baruch Hashem, alts is fine and voil, or do we scream together with those heads? And this, so it's brought down from this name of this pre-World War II Maggid, and at the time it was also being mentioned about how the whole world was constantly, until today, shouting and screaming, or where were the Allies during World War II? They took photographs of Auschwitz, Birkenau, they took photographs of all the camps, and no one bombed it, no one did anything. And this person basically was dealing with a perhaps more painful question, or was not where were the non-Jews, perhaps where were the Jews during World War II? Perhaps there were not so many people like Rechus Demich and these kind of people, and Dr. Schomfeld, and these kind of people, who were moist and nefesh to do whatever they could to try and save the situation. And the litmus test is always going to be when one chelik of Klal Yisrael, whichever chelik, whichever kind of head, is b'tzar, what does the other one do? The word am in Hebrew is the same letter as the word im. And the Kadmonim bring down that the definition of an am is im. The definition of the nation is going to be how much with one another are they. And this is, again, this is the Yesoidos Trust Rebbe's teaching us here, that To shorten the golus, Klal Yisrael has to be aware of what's going on the other heads. And when Rachman Litzlan, one chelik is screaming, the other, to define themselves as a nation, must do the same. The Maisa Hashem, Rabbi Loza Ashkenazi, when he brings down Haggadah Shel Pesach, he talks about the Halayla Hazer Shtei Pa'amim. We dip twice on Leil Pesach. And the first dipping is at the beginning of the evening, and the second dipping takes place towards the end of the evening. And he says that symbolically the two dippings symbolize the two stages of Mitzrayim. How he went down to Mitzrayim because of a dipping, and how he left Mitzrayim because of a dipping. He went down to Mitzrayim because of the dipping of the brothers of Yosef taking his Ksonus Pasha and dipping it in blood. And we went out of Mitzrayim, that's why we dipped towards the end of the evening. We went out also because of a dipping, because of the Agudas Ezov, the bunch of hyssop that was used to on the mashkoif, on the mezuzahs of the house, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu skipped over the Jewish house and only killed the Mitzrayim. So he writes there, he says the message is very clear. He says that at the beginning of the evening we remind ourselves why we went down to Mitzrayim, because of a pirut, a lack of achdus. The fact is the brothers of Yosef, and again it was the same, they when they reflect on the Avera was that Hizchanan Eileinu, when he was crying to us, we didn't take that enough. We didn't feel the tsar enough. Even though Al-Pidin, they held what they were doing was right, etc. But the chet which they did admit to at the end was that Hizchanan Eileinu. That was the first dipping. That's what caused us to originally go down to Mitzrayim. And as he writes there, what made us be able to come out of Mitzrayim was the Agudas Ezev, the Aguda, the bunch, the concept of the Achdus, the unity, the bunch of Hyssop, which symbolized the coming together again. That is eventually what managed to bring Klal Yisrael out. And again, that reminder is something which we need every single year. Every single year we need to remind ourselves of this and ask ourselves the same question of why we went down to this Golus and what we can do to rectify it. Because it seems that to be able to leave, one has to only be able to do that if one rectifies what the reason why one came in the first place. The famous Rabbi Chanan, that the reason why the blood libels took place over the years was because of the Mechiras Yosef, which he used to say, which again, it seems that through history we need that reminder to constantly remind ourselves of where we fell short and how to rectify it. There's a very beautiful idea from the Bnei Yisoscha at the beginning of Sefer Shoftim. It's an allegorical explanation to the Pasuk, but he brings a very beautiful idea which is relevant to what we're discussing here. The beginning of Sefer Shoftim begins at the end of the death of Yeshua, begins just after Yeshua ben Nun left. Vayi achrei Moshe Yeshua, vayishal ben Yisrael, v'Hashem Klal Yisrael now needed to conquer the remaining territory in Eretz Yisrael. Until this point, the territorial conquest of Eretz Yisrael was a national responsibility. It was a responsibility of all of Klal Yisrael to be Kovish Eretz. And now after Yeshua's death, the Kibush Eretz became the individual responsibility of each and every tribe. And Klal Yisrael asked, Mi Ya'ale Lonu? Who should go up for us first? They understood that there has to be a Seder here, and they wanted to know who should be the first Shevet to conquer his remaining territory now that Yeshua is no longer there. And the answer came back through the Urim V'Tumim, Vayoma Hashem, Yehuda Ya'ale. Yehuda should go up first. Malchus. Hinei Nosati Sa'aretz B'Yodoi, I've given the land over into his hands. Yehuda is Malchus, he always goes first. He goes first in a number of places in history. Puzzlingly enough, the next pasuk tells us, Vayoyme Yehuda l'Shimon Ochiv. Yehuda, which Papashas means Shevet Yehuda, turns round to Shimon his brother. Why Ochiv is there needs to be understood. We know that the two Shvatim are brothers. He turns around to Shimon his brother and he says to him, Alei iti v'goyroli. Come up together with me to conquer my lot. V'nilchama b'aknani, will fight against the Knani, and then V'alachti gamani itcho b'gerolecha, I will go together with you to conquer your lot. V'yelech itzei Shimon, and Shimon went together with him. So all the Mefarshim here asked, the Malbim, the Ash, they all ask, what's going on here? The Urim Tumim was consulted, the Urim Tumim gave a very clear answer. Yehuda Ya'aleh, not only Yehuda Ya'aleh, I've given the land over into his hand. So you can't tell me Yehuda needs to invite Shimon because he needs some sort of support. The Urim Tumim clearly told him, all is well, conquer the land, it's yours. Why did Yehuda extend that invitation to Shimon? Why to anyone? And why of all tribes to Shimon? So the Malbim learns that they geographically had adjacent land and it made most sense to Yehuda to do the conquering together. The Al-Sheikh learns that Yehuda felt sorry for Shimon. That's why it says Achiv. He felt sorry for Shimon. Shimon did not get a bracha from Moshe Rabbeinu because of the events of Bnois Moav. And he knew that he was hurting. He knew that Shimon was hurting from that. And being the older tribe, he wanted him to feel that he's important. He wanted to invite him, although Yehuda is the Malchus, he's the main one, but he wanted Shimon to feel that he needs him. And the Al-Sheikh describes the tremendous act of brotherly love that was displayed here by Yehuda to Shimon. That he invited him, not only invited him, he invited him in a way as if, I need you to come and join me. Alei iti will be a great aliyah for me if you'll join me, and I need your help, please come together with me. This is how the Al-Sheikh announced. But the Bnei Sosra brings a very beautiful allegorical explanation to this pasuk, which as we'll see is relevant to what we're discussing. Bnei Sosra writes as follows. He says that Beremez, this pasuk is talking about something much deeper. The Torah in Hilchas Rosh Chodesh brings down, and this is the Pesach, to a tremendous amount of machshav amongst the Sforim. The Torah brings down that there are three Ovis and there are three Yomim Tovim. Avraham is connected to Pesach, Yitzchak connected to Shavuos, Yaakov is connected to Sukkos. Why? Again, that's the topic of many, many Sforim. The Torah continues and says that it's no coincidence that there are 12 Shiftekah and there are 12 months of the year. And every single month corresponds to a different Shevet. And the story also is brought down that Abikabal also there's 12 different formations of the Shem Havaya, and each one corresponds to a different month. But there are 12 Chadoshim and there are 12 Shvatim. And hundreds of pages of Sifrei Kodesh have been devoted to explaining that connection between this particular month and the corresponding Shevet. How do we make the Cheshvan which corresponds to which? So many of the Kadmonim learned that it goes according to the way Klal Yisrael traveled in the Midbar. There was a specific order of how they traveled. So for example, Shevet God corresponds to Elul, because the sixth one to travel was God. Elul is the sixth month. And again, what the connection is the topic of many Sforim. But the reality is, if you want to understand God, Gimel Dalet, yeah? If you want to understand God, you need to understand Elul. If you want to understand Elul, you need to understand Shevet God. There's a deep connection between them. Hanagel in Yonenu, says Ibn Sosra, allegorically, the two Shvatim we're talking about in our Pasuk here are Shevet Yehuda and Shevet Shim. The first one to travel in the Midbar was Yehuda. So Yehuda corresponds to Nisan. The second one to travel in the Midbar was the fifth one to travel in the Midbar was Shimon, and therefore Shimon corresponds to the month of Av. Says Ibn Sosra, here at the beginning of the territorial conquest, in Sefer Shoftim, Eretz Yisrael has not yet been fully conquered. There's already here, at the beginning of Jewish history, a remez to what's going to be Ba'achis Yomim in the days of Mashiach. Says Ibn Sosra, Yehuda corresponds to Nisan, Shimon corresponds to Av. Yehuda's month, if we have to define it in one sentence, is a month of Geula, salvation, Yeshua. It's a tremendous month. It's a month of Nisim. The Rishonim bring down Nisan is called Nisan because of the Nisim. It's got the same gematria as Nisan, Nisim. It's a month of Geula, a month of tremendous Yeshuas throughout Jewish history. The month of Av is a month of Klala. It's a month of an oral, tremendous tragedies, a month of Chorban, a month of devastation, be it the two Bati Mikdash, be it all the five tragedies that Chazal bring down. And since then there's been tragedies by the Spanish Inquisition and the first one. The Tzoras, it's a month of Orosh in Komoyu, the month of Shim and the month of Av. However, Chazal very clearly say that Osid Lavoi, Shimon's month, the month of Av, is going to switch and become of primary importance. So much so that it will actually take the place of what is, for the time being, the most important month, the month of Nisan. Osid Lavoi Mashiach will come, there'll be a switch, the month, specifically Tisha B'Av, which has been a time of so many tears, will now switch and become primary importance, and Pesach will go back into second place and become of secondary importance. It's for the time being Oro, but eventually it will be the greatest, most blessed month. In fact, the Sforim point out that Av is Aleph Beis, Aleph is Oro, Beis is Baruch. Originally it was Oro, but eventually it will be Baruch. When you read the two letters together, it's Av, and we'll realize that everything was coming from our merciful Father in heaven. But be that as it may, in this pasuk here, the two Shvatim are Yehuda and Shimon. On a deeper level, Yehuda talking to Shimon is Nisan talking to Av. And at the beginning of the conquest of Eretz Yisrael, what he's saying to him is as follows: Vayoyim Yehuda leShimon Achiv. Yehuda says to Shimon, his brother. Nisan says to Av, Alei iti v'goyroli. You please come up together with me. I'm inviting, of all the tribes, I'm inviting you, Shimon. You, Av. Not for what you are, but for what you're still going to become one day. When eventually Mashiach will come, you, Shimon, your month specifically, will switch. But for the time being, Alei Iti, you come together with me as my sidekick. I, Yehuda, I, Nisan, am of primary importance, Pesach, and you are coming as my sidekick for what you're going to eventually become. But Nilchama Bakrani, we're going to go fight through the long Golas. But I promise you, says Yehuda to Shimon, I promise you, says Nisan to Av, that's not where it will end. I promise you the day will come, V'olachti gamani etcho b'geir olecho. I promise you I'll be happy to step back and let you, Shimon, move forward and become primary importance. And then I will go together with you. You will go forward. Your Tisha B'Av will be the main one. And I will step back and be in second place. Says the pasuk, Vayelech ito Shimon, so to speak, Shimon went along with him, and the two tribes, which are so deeply connected, went together through the journey of Golus. Says Ibn Sosra, this is the real reason why we have an egg on Leil Pesach. Egg, as we know, is Tisha B'Av food. It's Rachman and Stam Shiva food. The cycle of life, there's no mouth to it. What on earth are we doing eating eggs on Leil Pesach? Says Ibn Sosko, because as we know, the rule of Atbash, Leil Pesach always lands on the same day of the week as Tisha B'Av. And we need a reminder on Leil Pesach, that as we're sitting down to the Seder, as we're enjoying the tremendous goal of Mitzrayim, we need a reminder that for the time being, Yehuda's month, this, what we're doing tonight, is the most important Yom Tov of the year. But the day will come that what we're doing tonight, i.e. eating the egg, which reminds us of Tisha B'Av food, that will take the place of what I'm doing tonight and become of primary importance over what we're doing now. And this is, again, the reminder that we need. And the way it worked was that Yehuda showed that consideration and that sensitivity to Shimon, combining the Al-Sheikh, what we said, and the Bnei Sosra. That sensitivity they displayed to Shimon is what is going to carry us through this long Golos and eventually bring about that switch which will come. Just want to finish off, take 1 minute. The 400 years was shortened. It was shortened to 210. Through the sensitivity, it was shortened. But we never understood until it actually happened. We only understand these things in hindsight. All the Golis we've had so far, we were given figures, we were given numbers, and we only understood them in hindsight. We were told 400 years of Golis Mitzrayim, all of a sudden 210, we were taken out. 70 years of Golis Bavel, Belshazzar made Cheshbonis, he was wrong, Achashverosh made Cheshbonis, he was wrong, it was only understood in hindsight. And similarly, the final Geula, which, as you know, there's Be'itah and Achishenah, I'm speaking here specifically about Be'itah, which will be Zoichet to Achishenah, and it'll come early. By the end of Doniel, and this is why the Gemara says Doniel has no Targum, because he was not, Yonis and Menazir was not allowed to be Megala the Kates. By the end of Doniel, we have two dates of what the Rishonim tell us is Be'itah. Now, obviously, we don't know when to start calculating those dates. Like all the Golis, we don't know when to start counting to know when it finishes. But the last three Psukim in Doniel read, whenever the starting point is, after 1290, there'll be some sort of whatever it will be. The very next pasuk then says, Ashriya Mechakel, lucky will be the person that will wait. Lucky is the person who will come to 1335, which is 45 years later, and all the Rishonim shrike about what's going on here. Well, there's two Mashiachs, maybe there are, Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben... No one knows what this is about. But there are dates. And those two dates, 1290, it seems to be the first stage of, he'll be Nimlach as the king, whoever will be the first stage of the Mashiach, and then 45 years later will be 1335, and that's the Ashri HaMachake, that's when the Leviosim will come, the great Ashri Lachi, who will meet that time and be there for the incredible schar and pleasure that there'll be. And the Daskeni Bala Toises in one place brings down, Sefer Devarim, that the Aleph base backwards, Aleph base is the blueprint of Jewish history, and that's how it was created, the world, and everything that's going to happen is hinted to in the Aleph base. The Aleph base backwards hints to those two times. He reads as follows. Tof Shin Reish Kuf, if you add that together, comes to 1,000. So again, whenever the starting point is, the first stage of Mashiach, again in the Be'itah time, will be 1,290 years, or Yomim, whatever it is, after the starting point. So he writes, if you go backwards, and again, it's backwards because it seems we only understand this retroactively. Tosh, Sheen, Reish, Kuf is 400 plus 300 plus 200 plus 100 is 1,000. So far nothing's happened. Tzadik, Pei, Ayin, Samach is another 300. So whenever the starting point is, after 1,300 years, days, whatever it is, we will already be in the first stage of the Mashiach, and he'll already be Nimlach as the king, whatever the first stage will be. And that's why the next letters backwards are Nun, Mem, Lamed, and Chof, which is Nimlach. He would already have been Nimlach in stage number one. So if it's 1,300 years from the starting point, and the first date mentioned is 1290, there's only 35 years left. So Yud, Tes, Ches, and Zayin is the Gematria 34. Says the Das Keni Bala Tosfos, after 1,334 years, when that will end, V'hadag bo, Vov, Hey, Dalet, Gimel, but the remnant of the Leviathan, that will be the final Geula, the Ashi HaMechake, the tremendous, tremendous Chag. So to finish off, Alter Polish Yid once met somebody on Erev Chanukah, and he wished him, you should have a Lichtige Chanukah, a Freilichem Purim, a Kosherim Pesach, a Milchige Shavuos, but the Ikke is, we should all be Zeichet with Fleishike Tishma.